The NBA has legitimately become unwatchable, completely unwatchable. It's actually become one of my least favorite things in all of sports. And my favorite sport is basketball. I actually think that the epitome of all basketball as the game sits today is actually college. That's where the game is actually its best. And it's kind of maybe where it should end, perhaps internationally different, but certainly not the NBA. It's a disaster. We're going to talk about that. Speaking of the NCAA tournament, the expansion is announced, 76 teams. I'm going to tell you why I absolutely love this. Also, a huge critical mistake that college basketball is making that I really hope they find a way to fix. Why honestly do people even like the NBA anymore? Listen, if you're an NBA fan, I can live with that. But the product that we're getting right now is not basketball. It's just not. It really drives me crazy because when I was a kid, I was an Indiana Pacers fan by, you know, where I lived and grew up. And those games were good back then, back in the Reggie Miller days, back in the Michael Jordan days and the 90s Bulls and the Lakers and the Pistons of the early 90s and all these things. Like, but now, and even frankly, even the Tim Duncan Spurs and even the early, like Dirk Nowitzki and Steve Nash Mavs and several teams that were really good. But now it's gotten out of control. And we're going to talk about that today on an episode of Rajiv's Corner. Inside of the Bucky Report, if you're new to Rajiv's Corner on YouTube, it's because it's the first time it's been on YouTube. This is actually the premiere on YouTube, but it's always been on the podcast version. So if you're a Bucky Report follower on the podcast version, this is not a new show for you. It's going to happen. But it's new on YouTube, and it's going to be on YouTube every week. Haven't done it in a long time. If you've listened to me on the Bucky Report, you know that I just had a kid. So I've kind of taken a back seat from Rajiv's Corner, but I'm going to be bringing that back a little bit. Just 20 minutes, me talking about random sports topics, mostly related to the Wisconsin Badgers, but not always. Today, we're going to talk about some things that are outside of that and some things that are certainly a part of it. So Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, one of the best players in the league right now, probably the best player in basketball, it's unwatchable because the flopping is out of control. I mean, honestly, what is that? Like, so you're telling me that a basketball player can just dribble, penetrate, get any kind of contact, flail his arms out, and the referee willingly calls a foul. Is this that whole superstar call thing that that really became a thing with LeBron? Is it something else? Like, the officials have to know what they're doing, right? And as I've watched some NBA playoff games this season, some are better than others, but most is just a function of how can I ensure that I'm getting two shots at the line? How can I ensure that I'm going to get fouled and do this thing, maybe make a bucket, maybe not? If I don't get the foul call, I am livid. My coach is livid. All the players are going crazy. I'm up in the official's face. If I do get the call, the opponents and the other coaches are doing the same thing because it's a flop. Like, what happened to basketball? Why do they have to do that? Like, already I'm annoyed at the NBA, and I'm going to get to that. But the flopping specifically it makes the sport unwatchable. And all you're doing is truly rewarding players for making poor basketball plays. Like, you're just going in there and you're trying to create contact, which is fine, but you're not actually trying to make a really good play to get open space, to drive around someone. You're just trying to get fouled, right? You're just trying to produce contact. It also takes away good defensive plays, right? If I'm in a good defensive position and I'm holding that space, and now you're just driving at me and you're creating contact, well, then the foul's on you, right? If you're going to lower your shoulder, foul's on you. But no, not SGA. Why would it be? Because he's a superstar, and superstars have to get superstar calls, which doesn't make any sense. And it's just permeating its way through all the NBA, right? And now the good news is it hasn't done it in college. That's not a thing in college. In fact, we used to have the flopping rule in college that, you know, this whole thing that would happen. But now that's sort of gone away. I don't really know the rules. I don't really know what happened with, they used to call it technical foul if you did that, but now they're not really doing it. But they should. And the important thing is that flopping isn't really rewarded in college basketball the way it's rewarded in the NBA. Now, I used to officiate basketball on an intramural level, so let's get that straight. But once you've done it, you understand that it's one of the most difficult sports to officiate, partially because you've got the whistle in your mouth the entire time, right? So you have to make split-second calls versus if you're refereeing football, for example, you have a minute to think. You don't have to pull the flag out. You can make a decision as to whether or not you're actually going to make that call. But in basketball, it's a split-second decision. So I give a lot of grace to basketball officials because it is a very difficult task, and I respect that. But these officials are some of the best, allegedly, in the world, which means they know the sport and they understand basketball. They understand what a foul truly is. And when I watch these games and I see the officials immediately raise their hand and call a foul for the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen, it makes me question the integrity of the sport, the integrity from the top down through the officials, the NBA league office, everything. And it's really frustrating because this sport is the sport that I grew up loving, that I grew up playing, that I've like, you know, when some people are kids, they have soccer balls in their hand and in their feet. They're throwing baseballs with their dad or whatever. To me, it was basketball. That's what I always did. I was a basketball guy and I loved playing it. And it's such a pure sport and I love that. But the NBA is ruining that. Now, the flopping is one piece of it. The other thing about the NBA, which drives me nuts, is that, and listen, they're kind of too good for the sport, right? I've often said this, that the NBA at this level, because you're getting the creme de la creme of college basketball, right? And even international. And you're coming to the NBA where all these guys are incredible athletes. I don't want to take anything away from how good athletes these guys are, because they are incredible. They're the best basketball players on the planet. But it's almost as if the game is just the way the court is. It's just too easy for them, right? Scoring is too simple. Certainly now with getting to the foul line, all you have to do is touch some, you know, just create some contact. And you're getting to the foul line. It just produces way too much scoring. And I understand people like scoring, but you got to have some balance in sports. It can't just be who makes the most free throw shots. It's got to be who plays the best defense, who can make good plays. And listen, I know you can look at an NBA game and say, oh, there's great defense there. Okay, that's fine. There is. In my opinion, the court's too small. Like, I think I actually believe this, that the college is where the game of basketball as it sits today, I think sort of is epitomized by the college game. It's the skill level of the college athletes is good enough that they can be really great at the sport, but also not so great that it's just too easy for them. So there's a couple, you know, one, like, can we make the court bigger? I know that's hard with the arenas that the way they're built, but almost like it should be, because the 3-point line should be even further extended, especially in the corners. Also, maybe take that circumference of the rim, make it smaller. Why not make it harder for them to actually do some of these things? But it's really frustrating for me to actually think that this is pro basketball. This is the epitome of basketball. That's what people will say. The NBA is where basketball's at its finest. To me, that's complete nonsense. It's actually where basketball has gone to, in my opinion, die a little bit. And I know that you may just think, well, you're just an NBA hater. Maybe I am. But tell me that watching these playoffs and the extreme flopping that's happening, the fact that you can't go two or three plays without a whistle, you can't tell me that's basketball. You can't. It's just not. Then you go watch the college game and you see how hard these guys are playing, how hard they're defending. They're not as good as the NBA players, obviously. But it fits the game as it sits. At some point, the game has gotten too small for how good these athletes are. And you couple that with all this nonsensical refereeing, now it's gotten completely unwatchable. So I'm hoping, and I'm challenging the NBA to do something about this. Seriously, if you're not going to make the court bigger, the rim smaller, fine. Can we just play basketball? Can we just stop the nonsense? If someone fouls someone, blow the whistle. If someone flops, blow the whistle on them and call a technical foul. Because let me tell you how that all stops. You call one technical foul on SGA for flopping, he ain't doing it again. Okay? You call that in the next game, they're not doing it again. And within 1 week, all that is gone because nobody's going to risk losing, especially in the playoffs. It has to happen. College basketball, however, fantastic, and I certainly love it. And I do love the NCAA expansion. 68 teams to 76. We've added 8 teams in the tournament. Not a ton. It's fine. And there's going to be 7 more at-large bids because the Pac-12 is now getting an automatic bid again because they've created a conference again. So there's 32 automatic qualifiers. And there will be 44 at-large bids. So you're basically adding 7 at-large bids. And there are now 12 play-in games. So there used to be 4 play-in games, right? The two on the 16 line and then 2 on the 12 or 11, 12, whatever. 11 line, 12 line, whatever it was. Now there's going to be 12 play-in games. And I don't know how guaranteed this is the present time as far as like 16 seeds and 15 seeds, but it seems like all the 16 seeds are going to have to play their way in. And there's going to be 11s and 12s at larges will play their way in to the tournament. I think that's bananas. Okay. First of all, let's talk expansion. I love expansion. Okay. I've said this about basketball. I've said this about football. Playoffs in American sports it's everything. Okay. It's the more chances you have to do something special, the more exciting it is for the viewer. The more teams that get an opportunity to play for a national title, the more exciting the tournament is, in my opinion. The more madness you have, the more upsets you have. All this stuff is fine. I'm fully in favor of expansion in college football. I've said that many times. I'm all for a 24-team playoff. I'm all for whatever we need to do because it gives more people an opportunity to get in there and get excited about their team and have a high floor, right? Because you're a higher floor team if you're making it into some kind of a tournament every year. Now, you could argue that it's just too big and there's just too many at-large teams. But listen, like the teams on the bubble have 10-10 in conference, whatever, maybe in their 9-11. If you get in, you get in. I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it because ultimately it gives people more of a chance, which is fine with me. And it's more games in March for me to watch, which as a consumer of the sport, I'm all for it. I'm all for it. Here's what I don't like. And here's what I think is a fatal flaw of what was happening. And frankly, it's been happening for a long time. I've often had this opinion. There's 32 automatic qualifiers in the NCAA tournament. And there's 44 at large bids. Why do the automatic qualifiers have to play their way into a 64-team tournament? That is crap. It's been crap because 16 seeds have had to do this for a while. And I'm like, wait a second. 16 seeds are like the lowest of the low. They've fought their way into the NCAA tournament, maybe for the first time ever. They're screaming. They're going crazy. They're going dancing. And they want to go up and face off against Michigan or Kentucky or Duke or Wisconsin or whoever the number one seed is. Well, not Wisconsin once, but instead, they've got to go play another 16 seed, a team that just did the same thing that they did and won their conference tournament and clawed their way into the NCAA tournament, and they don't even get to play on that famous Thursday and Friday, those famous games. That's what it's all about, right? Thursday, Friday games are electric. That's where all the madness happens. You know, there's 32 games, 16 per day. It's awesome. That's always going to be awesome. And that's how it's going to stay, right? It's going to stay. Those 64 teams are going to play starting on that Thursday. Why can't the automatic qualifiers actually play in those games? Please. You want this to be exciting? Okay. You want 12 play-in games? Fine. All 12s, all 11s, all 10s. There you go. There are your 12 play-in games. That is going to make for some seriously good conversation. Those are your bubble teams, right? 10, 11, 12. Don't give automatic qualifiers above that. You know, or if you are going to give automatic qualifiers, then hell, put the 9s in the play-in game if you're going to put 12s at the automatic qualifiers. Generally speaking, 12 is kind of the limit of the automatic qualifier. And whatever it is, no automatic qualifiers should have to play into it, okay? And if that's 12 through 16, fine. If it's 13 through 16, that's fine. Whatever it is, right? If you play, that goes for a big conference too, right? Let's say Wisconsin would have been a 10 seed, but ends up winning the Big Ten tournament. Maybe they weren't even going to be in and they win the Big Ten tournament and they get in. You shouldn't have to play a play-in game, even if you're 11 or 12. Make the seeding to where those guys don't have to do it. 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Any at-large bid, any team that's on the bubble, you have 12 play-in games, you take those 24 teams and say, fine, play for it. That's exciting. Now people will detract from that, saying, oh, that's you're taking too many of the at-large teams and putting them in the pool. Then don't expand it, okay? You can't, and if you want to keep having two 16 seeds play, listen, I don't like it, but I'll live with it. You're going to have, according to what I've seen, you're going to have six play-in games for like 15, 16 seeds, and you're going to have six play-in games for your at-large, your 11, 12 kind of seeds. That's BS. What, every 16 seed has to play their way in the tournament? Why are they getting all excited when they win their conference tournament? What makes this special? That's the madness. And then you see that 15 seed go up against the Arizonas of the world, or the Michigan States of the world, or the teams that have lost that 2-15 game, and you have true March Madness. It's what that's where March Madness comes from. That's the whole concept of the madness and are those insane upsets and the excitement that gets built from watching those games. Don't make those guys play. But as far as expansion as a separate topic, I'm all for it. And I have zero issue with expanding the NCAA tournament because ultimately it's just more teams that get a chance. And I'm fine with an under 500 team in the Big Ten getting in. That's fine because some of these conferences like the Big Ten, right? Like the Big 12, the ACC, they're good conferences. They're really good. And getting through them is a gauntlet. So if maybe you are good enough to take a few, you know, rounds and to make some noise in the NCAA tournament, even if you finish 500 or below, I'm okay with that. And that's who you're going to start getting, right? You're going to start getting those teams that have, you know, the 9-11 records and the 10-10s. Usually 10-10 will get you in the actual dance right now, but you're going to have more of that. And again, that's fine. If it's more games that we get to watch as fans, I have zero problem with it. The last thing I want to touch on is Fickell's 2027 recruiting class, switching to more Wisconsin Badger focused stuff. His first two classes, right, 24, 25 classes, were really, really good. The 25 class was fantastic. And immediately the narrative around Luke Fickell became, wow, this guy can really recruit. And, you know, he's getting really, really good guys in this program that's, you know, some good, better four stars, more athleticism that can really turn things around and move it in the right direction. Then 26 came, not the best, right? Had some guys, lost some guys, wasn't the best. And then the whole discussion kind of came back about, can he recruit in state? Are we losing too many Wisconsin high school players to the Illinois of the world, the Iowa States, Penn State, so on and so forth, right? Well, that's not happening in 2027. He got that in 2027. The borders kind of got closed up. We did a show on this channel called Borders Closed because clearly that's what's been happening. What I think is really interesting is right now, remember, like a few months ago during the end of the football season, there were fans yelling, fire Fickell, right? We know this. We talked about this. And what that means, of course, is that the program is in a bad spot. Now, I think the corner has been turned. I think the rock bottom has been hit. And, you know, the addition of all the transfer players and Colton Joseph and all these things, I think we're going to be better this year. We've talked about that. But to couple that, and even if we haven't seen that success yet, we still have to see it on the field. But after what happened in the 26th class, to come back and start this strong in 2027 is pretty remarkable. Really remarkable. It's actually almost sending the message that, like, yeah, we are really turning the program around. Could this actually be Fickell's best class? I think it legitimately could be. It started out very, very well. And you're not just getting good players. You're getting good players from the state, right? You're getting good four stars, like obviously like Kingston Allen, who's obviously a Wisconsin guy, and Cole Reeder. And then you've got guys like Jack Sorge, a four-star quarterback from Indiana, but it's a legacy player. So that's important because there's all this discussion about, you know, the relationship that Fickell has with the alumni, but that's getting better, right? I've seen that recently firsthand. I think that's definitely improving. And now he's recruiting better in the state, right? He's actually focusing more on that, but maybe he was always focusing on it and he didn't want those guys. He wants these guys. There's good talent in the 27 class in the state of Wisconsin, and he's locking those guys down. And I think a lot of credit has to be given to Luke Fickell for being able to have the product that's been put on the field recently, which frankly has not been good, and somehow still sell the program to top guys that could easily go elsewhere. That's not an easy feat. And this legitimately could become Luke Fickell's best class when he still has basically not had a winning season, first season, whatever. But like, this team is in essence rock bottom as far as the stature that Wisconsin football typically has. And what's come of it is another good recruiting class, locking down in-state recruits, continuing to get athleticism, continuing to find profiles. Like, obviously, Luke Fickell needs to show it on the field, and I've been as much of a critic as anyone, and he needs to be able to produce 7 to 8 wins this upcoming 2026 season. But the class that he's putting together in 27 cannot be understated. And it's something that we're going to talk a lot about on the Bucky Report over the next couple months as OV season hits in June and we really start to fill out this class. Right now we got 12 people in there, probably going to end up in the low 20s like typical. That's pretty spectacular. And I think that we're going to look back on this and say, man, like after the 25 class, now the 27 class may be his best. He still hasn't won on the field. Now he goes and wins on the field in 2026. We win 7 or 8 games. What do we think the 28 class looks like? What do we think the 29 class looks like? This is when you can actually start to get excited and feel like Luke Fickell's truly turned a corner, which I think is exciting. That's going to do it for Rajiv's Corner today. But again, like, subscribe, share. You'll see these 20-minute episodes through the week, middle of the week generally. We're still going to do, of course, our hour-long episodes on Sunday night with Justin, as always. Talking about tons of recruiting stuff coming up soon. Spring football just ended. Of course, fall is coming. We'll add in our Know Your Foe series in the summer. So much to talk about. But look out for these Rajiv's Corner episodes. I like doing them just because it's just me talking to a mic for 20 minutes about topics that we don't always cover on the podcast, on the regular podcast, but to just add some flavor and something different in there. The last thing, I'll just kind of circle back to where I began. Please, NBA, do something different. It's not good enough. It's not good enough. You're taking the sport of basketball, which I have loved my entire life, and you're kind of making it seem like a crap product. People complain about the horrible product of the NBA. I mean, it's kind of hard not to argue with them. Honestly, it's not hard to argue. It's hard to argue with them because look at it. A whistle on every other play, it's not happening. It's not what the sport was intended for. It's not the epitome of the game. You want to see the epitome of the game? Go watch college basketball.